So I will speak about the integrated field series, and from the yield we heard a couple of talks by Pedro. Even if they were not specialists, no big time in use.
I wasn't here for it.
Okay, but still, then it's good for you because intersection will be quite huge. So first I want to speak about integrability in two dimensions in general. So what does it mean in two dimensions? Integrability is simply infinitely many integrals of motion. Like in classical mechanics, extra integrals of motion, they help to separate variables and solve equations of motion quite explicitly. And here in field series, we solve models to compute some quantities which are not computable using standard field theoretical technique like perturbation theory. And the particularly important quantity which can be computed is the spectrum of the theory. And I will show, give you some ideas how is it possible to do. So most studied examples are also two-dimensional, but quite recently integrability in field theories was also observed in high dimensions, like in four first and then in three-dimensional gauge theories. This will be the second part of my talk. I will explain this kind of integrability because in high dimensions, integrability has quite a different character compared to two-dimensional integrability. So as I said, first I will speak about integrability in two dimensions. Then I will give some quite explicit example of integrable systems, integrable field theory. And then I will speak about ADS-CT correspondence and integrability for dimensional gauge theories. So if we have some conserved charge, there should, in field theory, there should be some operator on Hilbert space correspondence. And since it's commuting this Hamiltonian, it should also be true that single particle states with some definite momentum are eigenstates of this operator corresponding to the integral of motion. We denote its eigenvalues by one variant k. And we have infinitely many of them, so n goes from 1 to infinity. Now, if we sandwiches between two states, between some in state and out state, contain a different number of particles with different momenta. What we observe, assuming that particles are weakly interacting when they are well separated from each other, like in massive series, that's definitely true. Then what we should observe is that. What we get is just sum of eigenvalues of a single particle space. And then we have that constraint on the outgoing momentum of the particles, namely that sum of these eigenvalues for each phi e should be equal to the same quantity computed for incoming particles. Then you see we have infinitely many constraints for outgoing particles, and then generically there shouldn't be any solution. Right, except, of course, one obvious solution that the set of outgoing momenta is exactly the same as the set of incoming momenta, and the number of particles should be the same in and out state, otherwise this should be zero. So we conclude that in integrable field series, there is a very specific feature, namely the number of particles should conserve during the scattering. In asymptotical states, number of particles should be the same. And moreover, during the scattering, they can only exchange their momentum. That's the only thing which can occur. But that's not the only nice feature of integrable field theory. another one, so-called factorization first matrix. Namely, if we consider some three particles scattering, and if we think about these particles as being some wave packets, we do so that they meet at the same point in scattering, then we will get some three-point S matrix. But now, if we act by some integral of motion, since this integral of motion is some function of momentum, in principle, it, like momentum itself, if you put momentum itself here, it will just displace all the particles by some distance. But since it is some non-trivial function of momentum, it will display the particles differently. And in particular, we can find such combination that only particle number two is displaced to the right. Okay, in this way, we will express three-point scattering in terms of just two particles scattering this matrix. And that's not all. We can also act by inverse operator, and this time displace this particle to the left. And if we erase this middle picture, what we see is some non-trivial constraint on a two-to-two particle scale. So we conclude that the same we can do for any number of particles, that any number of particles, actually, their scattering is described only in terms of 2.2 particle scattering matrix, and moreover, the 2-point scattering matrix should satisfy the Sion-Baxter equation. And now, having this information in mind about integrable field theory, we can compute spectrum in some limit. So, for spectrum usually is continuous, and to regularize it, we put it in some box, some quite large lens, and then the spectrum will be, of course, distant. And now, so what we understood is that number of particles is a good quantum numbers. Provided that the particles are well separated from each other, but we shouldn't think that there are no such processes as virtual pairs creating and then annihilating. But when particles are coming close to each other, all this mess of quantum field theory it came into the game. But if the size of the system is large enough and the particles they have enough room to be always separated far from each other, we can think about the system as just a system in non-relativistic quantum mechanics with just some point-like interaction. And then in each sector, for each ordering of the coordinates of the particles, we will have wave function which is approximately a plane wave function. Right? Because of the anisotropical region, there are just three particles. But then if we want to interchange two coordinates, this follows to multiply the wave function by some factor, which is exactly S matrix, which is a scattering phase. And then if we want to go from X1...
Very explicitly, if these particles have labels, then the S just depends on P1, P2, and it hits label A1, B2, and just can you just write very explicitly what S is? S is just some phase in general.
Yeah.
It depends on
here. Let's assume S is just phase dependent on two momentum.
And the particles don't have any other labels.
Yeah, right. Okay. But if they have any labels, then S will have four indices: two for incoming and two for outgoing indices.
Okay.
Then those indices they should be contracted. Some way that only indices survive.
So right now what you're doing at the starting is just writing down the multi-particle wave function for
Right, because as I explained, the number of particles is a good quantum number, and we actually can think in terms of just Schrödinger equation.
Right.
So you just can keep in mind this classical example of Schrödinger equation with delta function interaction. It is one of the integrable examples, which is a very good representation. Okay. So now we want to assume periodicity of wave function, and by taking, and this implies that this factor here is actually 1. And taking logarithm of that, what we will get is this equation. And you see, if we drop S matrix, it will be just usual discrete spectrum of three particles. But due to interaction between particles, there is this extra factor. And this equation just corrected quantization condition by interactions. They are called the beta equation in general. So
can you say so that system of just n particles in non-relativistic quantum mechanics with the double function interaction, that is integrable?
Yes. So you can write that it depends on that. So now, some explicit example. Maybe the S3 sigma model. So S3 sigma model has very simple action. It can be written in terms of four scalar fields. But, however, they're subjected by the constraint that they look like they belong to a sphere, in three-dimensional sphere. Then, due to this constraint, equations, classical equations of motion for the section, they become some nonlinear equations. And in general, it's very complicated to solve them, but they happen to be also integrable. And in two slides, I hope I will manage to prove it. So, for that end, let's introduce a current which is a 4x4 matrix. Which I define as that, the anti-symmetric 4x4 matrix. And just from as a consequence of the constraint, we can easily see that this current is actually flat, it's a pure B. Okay? This is one statement about the current, and another statement is that equations of motion they have that form. And then, in terms of the current, they just imply conservation of the current. So basically, in terms of currents, it's very simple. The system just some conserved current and with some flatness condition. Now we can define some family of currents, if you want, depending on some arbitrary complex number z. And this expression designed in such way that due to flatness of the current and conservation of the current, this object is also flat. It is also pure gauge for arbitrary z. So now what we can do, we can take this connection and compute Lewson loop going around the periodical. So this is sigma direction, and we assume periodicity in sigma. And we compute this monodromy, this so-called monodromy matrix as a path integral processor, as a path ordered exponent around some path gamma, which goes around the worksheet. And now, due to flatness, we can deform the contour as much as we want, and it will not change the result, right? This is what is flat, follows to deform the contour. And in particular, we can shift the contour in time, okay? Oops, then it's hard to see. Then we conclude that that function trace of this matrix omega doesn't depend on t on equations of motion. So it is some non-trivial function of the field. If you go back to axis and try to compute what is omega in terms of axis, it is some manifold integral in general. So it's a very complicated function, but what happens that once a field satisfies the equation of motion, this is constant. So if we just expand this trace in a Taylor series around some point, it will automatically produce infinitely many integrals of motion.
The Taylor expanded in what? Can you say in what you're Taylor expanding in?
I'm expanding in Z.
In Z.
Because Z is arbitrary complex number. So for any value, I can control the charge. And in particular, I can expand or I can just pick any points on complex plane, right? Get using some many custom charge. And one can also prove that they are actually independent.
Do you worry about Z equals 1, where A becomes singular?
Yeah, there is some singularity, but that's exactly the point where it is very good to expand in Lorentz fields. And
is there some particular reason that you divide it by Z squared minus 1?
Yeah, this form is dictated by this condition.
Oh, I see.
There is no much reason. You can send Z to some function of Z, but in any case, that's the simplest possibility up to some redefinition of Z.
Yes. But also, the fact that there is two pools, it's also the fact that you have a relativistic system. The form Z squared minus 1 dictated by relativistic invariance. That's how originally Zakharov was made.
Okay. That's something. In all relativistic systems, there are two poles, but also in light cone string, which is not a relativistic system anymore, there are also two poles. So it's not one to one related. Okay, so we checked that this system is at least classically integrable, and we can believe it is quantum integrable as well. That there are these commuting operators in given space, and then just from the symmetry of the system, which is S of 4 or S of 2 times S of 2. The symmetry constrain very much the tensor structure of this method, and moreover, from Young-Baxter equation, we can constrain this matrix. And there are also some cross relation, but some physical constraints on this matrix. And what we will find is this equation. So. They look a bit more complicated than what I showed before, but this is because now S matrix has exactly this tensor structure. Now there are indices, and we also have to diagonalize this tensor structure. So these two equations are exactly doing this job, the diagonalizing tensor structure. And the middle equation, if I just drop these two equations, it looks exactly as before I showed you for a scalar scattering. So this middle equation corresponds to scattering without change of quantum numbers. Like two particles, both are, I don't know, spin ups, and the scatter and they are still spin ups. Then for this scattering, we don't need this variable. And then we solve this equation, and spectrum is just given by this rapidity of parameterization. And this is important to note that there are two wings. Each of them correspond to the symmetry subgroup SU2 and SU2. So for each SU2, there is a wing. This structure is very similar to what happens in ADS-UT, as I will explain. So now, about integrability in higher dimensions and the ADS-CFT correspondence. The integrability in higher dimensions was noticed, first it was noticed just for pure QCD theory in some particular kinematic region, but I won't to focus on n equal 4 super m u, because here repeatability is much richer. So what is the series? Just usual Young-Mill series with six fermion fields, sorry, six boson fields and plus some fermion. And we want to focus on the following operator, just many, many scalar fields taken at the same point x, and then we take place. So then what happens, as you know, this operators, they don't behave nicely under the normalization, and usually we have to form some combinations of them, which we call the normalized operators. And then there is some mixing matrix of operators, because we have to form some particular combinations of operators so that they they're nicely normalized. And then people notice that this matrix is actually integrable Hamiltonian. Integrable spin chain Hamiltonian. That's so if we identify this operator with some state of spin chain, with arrows up or arrows down, corresponding to P1 and P2, then basically what integrability means is that diagonalization of this huge matrix, which has a size 2 to the L or times 2 to the L, can be easily, can be solved by means of some algebraic equations. Namely, at one loop level, the equations are very simple. So we just solve these equations, and we get anomalous dimensions, which are eigenvalues of mixing matrix. What can we do with this equation? In particular, we can solve them numerically. Here there are some plots. Here I'm changing some parameters, some quantum numbers, and I see how the solution changes accordingly. So this complex plane, and then dots, each dot corresponds to one bit root, one u. For each u, there is one dot on the complex plane.
The u's are the bases in the.
No, u's, they are something like momentum. Momentum of the excitations on the spin chain. So, but what I want to make point the point that you see in different regions of parameters.
What are the x and y axes on this point?
Sorry?
What is this two-dimensional plane?
It's that complex plane, because roots with u's, which I call roots, they're in general some complex numbers. So this is a complex plane, and dots, they correspond to u's.
And how many u's are there, if I have an n-side chain?
Each u, it roughly corresponds to one flip spin. So if you have just all spins up, no u's, but one s flip.
What is the parameter that you change?
Well, I'm changing n. In the
n?
L, now length of this, of the chain. I keep the number of measurements.
Okay. You are increasing the length?
No, I'm decreasing. You see, decreasing. Okay.
This is
So first of all, you see these points, they condense into some cuts, which you see we quite successfully could compute analytically. These lines, this analytical result. And in some regions, you see roots, they're separated by exactly the same amount. And actually, if you see numerics, you will notice that separation is exponentially close to I. Really close. So I have to use like 100 digits precision to make this plot because of the degeneracy. And why it happens, for example, if we take A to infinity, it's the simplest operation I mean, it's possible to understand. and one of the roots is, has some imaginary part, then the left hand side, its absolute value is bigger than one. Then when we take a huge power L, it will explode to the exponential large. And the only way to compensate it is to have another root separated by the root we considered by I, to have a pole. So this is why, and this will be important.
What was happening there is that two bound states become of the same length of the chain and therefore merge into one that you cannot separate into
two. Two bound states?
Just on this plot.
I mean, on this plot, total number of points should be less than the length of the skin chain over two. Okay? So, I mean, whatever they do, the number of them conserved is always less than the over two. What's actually your question?
It's just that the two disk cuts merge together at one.
Right, but number of points it's always preserved. It's the same solution, it just you see, on both pictures, total number of dots is always less than n over 2.
I'll ask you later.
Okay. So, now, so far it looks quite mysterious, this integrability. How come such strange object like mixing matrix turns out to be integrable Hamiltonian? Why all of that? And the natural explanation comes from ADS-CFT duality, which tells us that spectrum of anomalous dimensions is actually the spectrum of some two-dimensional integrable field theory. What is the field theory is more or less like before, like a three, just its bosonic part now has two constraints. One telling that we're on S5 and another that we are on ADS5. And so that's something further.
You're just writing what the strength it is.
Right.
The,
yeah. So it's conformal gauge of. And then string theory has two parameters, namely string tension and string coupling. And Young Mill theory also has two parameters, number of colors and gauge coupling. And what's important is the symmetry of both Supri and Mills and of this string theory is a PSU 2 to 4. So how to see it more or less? Let's see what is bosonic part of the symmetry. One bosonic part is SU4. And what is SU4? SU4 is roughly SO6. Right, and SO6 is just a symmetry which rotates the four scalars which I showed you in the action. For example, four, it just isometry of the S5 sphere. Okay? Then the third bosonic component, which is SU2, is roughly speaking SO42, which is isometry of ADS5. And at the same time, it is a conformal symmetry. It's Lorentz symmetry plus conformal transformations of Young Mills. Because Young Mills, Supran Mills is a conformal symmetry. Okay? Any questions?
This statement, am I supposed to take the statement as literally true? It's the spectrum of the bulk theory, which is the spectrum of anomalous dimensions. The spectrum of the bulk theory is not the spectrum of the theory that lives on the world sheet.
By speaking about spectrum, I mean some particular choice of the time direction, some temporal gauge. So it's not some super invariant in this language.
No, but I'm just saying something dumb. If you have a string theory, it's just a flat space. The spectrum of the theory that lives on the world sheet, with respect to world sheet time, has nothing to do with the spectrum theory in the space side.
Right, but if you choose temporal gauge, and temporal gauge is actually...
In temporal, yes.
That's what I mean, sir. I mean some kind of temporal gauge.
Some kind of temporal. I'm just saying, you didn't say the word DNN limit, nothing like that. Right, so...
So in some particular gauge fixing, the state moves.
Okay.
And it is quite explicit.
So this is the Lightcon gauge? Some Lightcon gauge?
Yeah, Lightcon gauge is also. Mm-hmm. But in Lightcon gauge, it's not spectrum, spectrum plus your
J. Yeah,
basically. Okay, so as I said, symmetry, we know the symmetry, we know it is integrable now. Straightforward, more or less exercise, which was performed by the gentleman. I have to find the beta loss equation describing the spectrum. And so, to make it a bit clear, it's better to write a Dynkin diagram for TSU22 group. And you see for each node in the Dynkin diagram, there is one equation. So, with some pattern, you can remember now. Moreover, for each SU22 subgroup, there is a link similar to what was happening for SO4 and sigma model. So, any questions?
So, this is all fixed by symmetries? The structure is fixed by symmetries completely?
And by symmetries and some physical constraint, which is called crossing. It's related to scattering of particles with antiparticles.
This is one loop?
No, this is all loop. This is all loop Betanzatz, and in principle, it should predict anomalous dimension for loops of this operator. However, as I was explaining before, the Betanzatz, it is working well only when the volume of the system is big enough, so the particles they have space to reach the asymptotical plane wave asymptotical wave function. And what happens with this equation is that they're also accurate, but only for a very long operators with exponential precision, but when the number of constituent field is large enough. So it is not complete solution of the spectral problem, and we are not yet satisfied, because in particular we won't just take some simplest operator which could be computed with the perturbation theory from the means and compare it with there are also many applications where it is not satisfactory just to have this answer for infinitely long operators.
Can you point in this page where the get, where you put the answers? You have to make some guess about what is the whole loop with the answers, right?
Right.
So the answer is that middle equation?
No, there's always
the whole answer. Okay.
But these two beams, they're just coming from the symmetry, and this one is scattering without change.
Right.
So you can't, of course, constrain by symmetry, because it's you want scattering.
That middle equation is the periodicity of the wave function.
Right, it's periodicity. And it is constrained from this crossing relations.
What is that nu?
Nu is dressing phase, which I didn't write.
Okay, so is that where all the stuff is, though? No? Huh? Is that where all the guess work is going?
Right, the most complicated part of things is this. But finally, it's quite solid, and actually, it's very new in some sense. Okay. So, I just want to express my non-satisfaction about this equation, that they only describe infinite L. And I just want to remind you that it's very similar to what we had before, but suppose a little bit simpler. And I want to continue with this example. To answer the question, how could we get the spectrum in finite volume knowing all the asymptotic spectrum? And the answer is the following. For example, if we put the theory on torus, then we can quantize it in two different directions. Once again, once along tau direction and another time along sigma direction. And then we will express the partition function of the theory in two different ways using using spectrum length L and spectrum length R. So R is this radius and L is this small. Then we can send R to infinity. And the right hand side now we control because we know asymptotical spectrum. We know the spectrum when R goes to infinity. And so we can compute ground state energy, which is the only term which survives on the left hand side, exactly for any value of L. You see? So now in asymptotical spectrum, using the tricks, we can compute spectrum. We can compute exactly the ground state energy as a function of water. It's a very non-trivial function. And,
can you say why tonics, these two things should be equal to each other? It wouldn't be true for any old field.
No, it is true at least for the relativistic fields, right? Where you weak rotate and you get the same theory. You use double weak rotation. I mean, after all, it is some kind of Poisson summation from.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. It is true for anything.
So it looks very simple, but actually now we have to compute the sum. Okay? And the spectrum is governed by a beta equation, which is not just a quadratic equation. So we have to analyze the distribution of the roots in this particular limit and find the configuration which gives the main contribution to the sum. So the sum, actually we can, since there are infinitely many terms, actually we can approximate by integral and then by saddle point. So we need finally only one configuration which gives the main contribution. And the typical configuration of the roots, it looks like that. Namely, there are some roots on the real x, and then some roots separated by I. As I explained to you before, it is the most natural configuration for the beta roots when n goes to infinity. Remember. And now, to describe a state, we introduce density of the roots which are real, then density of another type of roots, and then density of the middle of this complexes of the length I. Okay? And for any complex of any length, we introduce its own density. So with this.
What was real one? No, just that.
So you see there are two types of complex roots, theta and u. So thetas, actually there are also these, but the same thing. So thetas are white dots and u are blue dots. So using these densities, we can approximate the state quite well for our goals. And then it happens that it's very natural to introduce some y's, which are some ratios of densities. And then the saddle point equation for the configuration which gives the main contribution to the sum is very simple. It is just functional equations. Here I forgot the presence notation. It's y plus this argument is shifted by I over 2. So we get some functional equation, and then the spectrum of the vacuum state is given by this integral. Once we solve it, we took y zero, we integrate, and we get spectrum.
So it's rho bar, the level density? Rho and rho bar.
Rho bar is actually the density of the holes, and I didn't want to explain it. But
so you take that ratio, and that's what we're doing.
Right, but rho bar is some quite explicit function or process that didn't want to complicate in this book. And then you see this equation, it is some equation on a lattice. Roughly, it looks like some Laplacian or something like that, or it's discrete Laplacian, but actually, it is some discretization of Sine-Gordon dynamics. This equation by itself turns out to be integrable in some sense. Yes?
This k is 0, 1, and 2, is it?
This k is density of the complexes of length k. how many root.
Wait, where do you distinguish which or what kind of roots and dense? So you have many different types, right? You have U's and A's and so on.
Yeah, tilde they can, so it's, it's very simple actually. So if I take it's just question of some tiny size. Okay. If I let me go to
pretty much back.
Imagine I have here minus and here plus. Then instead of explosion, it will be suppression. And here it's not to. I mean, only with this signs, this complex could form. Because otherwise, there is a. So let me explain the problem. We have minus and plus. Let's pick the root with maximal imaginary part. Okay? Then this goes to zero, right? Because now absolute value is smaller than one. And to have equation satisfied, we must find zero at the right hand side. But for that, we should have another root with bigger, yet bigger imaginary factor. This is not possible because we, from the very beginning, took the root with the maximum. So just equation of some sign that you, it's really not hard to analyze something. And in particular, here you can see that if it was plus, then there would be bound states of theta.
So far you're solving this as stream theory.
Yeah, that's just for demonstration. Okay. So what we more or less did, we already found the ground state energy as a function of volume. But of course we want the whole spectrum, right? And the idea of Dorian Tatel is that energy as a function of volume is actually a multivalued function of A. On the complex plane, there are some halves. There are some monodromous ones. We can analytically continue along some paths. And indeed, what would happen with this integral if we analytically continue in air plane? There are some logarithmic singularities which could give some additional contribution to this integral. And this gives rise to this kind of residue. You just compute logarithmic residue of this. We will get cos theta I, where theta I is just minus 1 of y0. Because minus 1 of y0 is logarithmic singularity. And then you see, this is exactly what we had in asymptotical B-transact. So the picture is, that when we send A to infinity, this first integral disappears, and the energy is just given by usual relativistic expression, just the sum of each energy, of each particle. So this one looks quite natural, but functional equation doesn't have any integrals, right? So if we can analytically continue whatever, it doesn't change. So. The idea of Dorian Tatel is just to pick the same equation, but now modify equation for the energy. And also, actually, we have to be careful in choosing which solution of this equation, because there are many solutions of this equation. Only one of them corresponds to vacuum, and all the others to some excited states. So we have to carefully identify each solution of this equation. But that's possible to do using B-transact. And then we solve that numerically with Kazakov and Vieira, and we got this plot. And in particular, when it is large, The spectrum must match with the spectrum given by B transverse equations, and of course it is so. Then there are known corrections to the B transverse first exponential correction in the so-called Lusher term, and it also matches. And then when
the Lusher term is the sort of Casimir, because of one over length squared in this case.
No, that's it's exponential. X squared, what is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is it's a massive. It's a first exponential correction.
Right, but here, for example, what you want probably is this ground state value
sure.
At ultraviolet limit. Right? Is what you want. The ultraviolet limit of the theory is the conformal theory, just theory of. Four free bodies because coupling goes to zero because of the asymptotically free theory. So we end up with just a theory of three bosons. And we also can extrapolate some asymptotic ultraviolet and compare with this spectrum. So it's quite nice. And moreover, for the first ground state, it was known before. We compare, so our approach is perfect. And then now the question is how to generalize it for EDCFT. And the answer is the equations are pretty much the same as before. That's our conjecture. What changes is just a form of the lattice, right? It's white, to which white belongs. So these equations are always the same for any theory. For which it was derived, equations are always of this form, it's so-called Y system equation. What changes each time is just boundary conditions. For example, here we assume Y is to be infinite here, zero on this line, and also infinite. So infinite on all horizontal borders and on vertical, which set them to zero. In particular, you see, if we send this y in denominator to infinity, we will get exactly what we had before for SO4 case. And the energy is also given by the similar formula.
What fixes these boundary conditions?
So boundary conditions, namely the form of the lattice, that's the form of this thing which is mainly important. Comes from the analysis of this bound state, so which kind of complexes they could be formed. Naturally, there are different types of complexes. First, it is some unjust strings made out of thetas, roughly speaking. Right now, thetas they can form complexes. Then there are some pyramids, it is some composite states which involves roots of different types. And then there are also strings of bosons.
These correspond to bound states in the mirror theory.
Right. So each dot here corresponds to some bound state in the mirror theory. And then we know more or less how they should interact with each other just by multiplying beta equations for bound states, and we see how do they interact with each other.
So which assumptions? I mean, there are one point of the various possible assumptions about which states present in the mirror theory. Is this the same assumptions as MX work in a poorly finished paper?
So there are some ambiguities in this, but actually, if you want to satisfy all the constraints, like if you want to have B transats when it goes to infinity, then there are no actually ambiguities in this procedure, and that's the only thing you will get from it. So, of course, we want to test this equation, and now we are trying to solve them numerically, but it's quite complicated and very slow. The first simple limit is infinite length and or recoupling limit. Okay, so it should be B times up plus first correction, what we should get. And what happens in this limit is that all y's living in the middle, they vanish, they're suppressed exponentially. And the system decomposes into two rings, into two independent set of equations, which is now much simpler. And actually, we can solve these two rings explicitly. It's in one slide, I will tell you how. So it is very, very useful to rewrite these equations using the parameterization like that. It's just y is some kind of Laplacian or some t. You can think t is like field strength, and y is the field strength, and t is the potential. It's just trivial rewrite. But what we see from this equation is that t's are some kind of generalized characters. Namely, if we drop this plus minus, this displacement by I over 2, we will recognize the relation, this determinant relation between characters for rectangular Young tableau. Sizes of Young tableau. You can check, for example, dimensions SON or different representations, they are basis equations. And so this was kind of generalization. Now we have some, this is a function of use. And actually, it is possible to build the generalization again using just two point scattering S matrix. If we denote it like cross, then we remember it should be a Young-Baxter relation. And then we can form this object, which is trace of many product of S, which we can represent by this picture. And we, along this line, we just change the representation. Instead of fundamental, we take some representation of this shape. Then, just from Young-Baxter, it is quite simple to show that actually these matrices, they are commuting, and we can, for arbitrary pair of representation, they are commuting matrices, and we can diagonalize them at the same time, and their eigenvalues, they solve the Hirota equation. That's possible to show. And then, okay, we took the simplest operator and using all explicit expressions we had, compute this y to middle expression explicitly. And then we computed energy correction with respect to B times that, and it's in agreement with four loops perturbations. So, okay. Coming to conclusion. Anyway, so now we can go below asymptotical B-tanzat, so this is the technique we developed. And the integrability allows to predict very complicated calculations made perturbatively from thousands of diagrams. And hopefully, it will be also possible to compute some quantities while better decoupling. And the most interesting, there is some prediction to all orders of lambda to some anomalous dimension coming from pure QCD, which is also prediction for n equal 4 minus u. This, we hope we can confirm or check our results. Thank you.
Any questions?
Can you repeat why the eigenvalue of this monodomy matrix satisfy this? Wait.
So that I was telling that this T is kind of generalization of generalization of CAD. So we take a trace and some representation of some quantity. Then it happens so that it satisfies the equation. But for example, if you send U spectral parameter to infinity, then T becomes really imperative, right? And then it must satisfy Hirot when you drop this plus minus. Just to give you some idea why it satisfies, otherwise it's very technically involved. Anyone don't want the proof.
So that's the question, these condition operators, don't they have dependence on the space-time argument, x, by then?
No, it's all the same point.
Well, it's one point, yeah. And the answer doesn't depend on that.
Some question.
Anyway.
So you were able to reproduce this calculation of Yonlek using Shor.
Right.
Considerations. Do you have them more orders after that? In principle, yes.
So in particular from white system, we derive all the Lucher. It comes out of the
central. But you know what the addressing phase is for the mirror theory.
Yeah, we have some ideas. Actually, it is in our papers, but maybe not very explicitly written.
But it can be expected.
Right. Stuff they don't want to at the moment to be with stuff.
That's my question.
Actually, only recently ourselves we were able to.
How?
By analyzing our own results.
But does it agree with? So there are various aspects. Does it agree?
No. Yeah, so there is a Aratunov-Fralov proposal for addressing metrics, but it is divergence in Fralov. Right? So they don't have a proposal. They have infinity.
Any more questions? Yeah.